Susan Bassino with us as we talk about her latest updated work, The Secrets of the Universe, her website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we shall be back. We'll talk more with her about some of her ghost adventures and take your phone calls and stories on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Susan Bassino with us, of course, and we'll get your phone calls in just a second. Let's talk a little bit more about some of these ghost adventures. And there's no question that sometimes articles are attached and ghosts stay with them. We've had a number of people that have been on the program before, Susan, that are experts in this, John Zaffis being one of them. You had similar things happen with some of your son's Titanic items, right?
Yes, it was really crazy because we had everything when he was little, of course. Between the ages of 4 and 6, we bought him every book, every toy, every puzzle that you could imagine that was on the Titanic. And then, of course, it was all pretty much packed away when he became a teenager. And when the show came around, they wanted us to collect up, you know, everything and take pictures. And we put everything on display, which, you know, appears in the show. But what happened was we lived in a ranch house in Madison with a finished lower level. Now, we had a lot of activity in that house anyway. I mean, because I don't know if it's because of me or my son or that we were...
Or both, combination of both of you.
Well, yeah, and we were also very possibly the house might have been on a burial ground in Wisconsin.
Nice.
We did find an arrowhead in the backyard, which was interesting, but it was a very active house, and we were pretty used to that, though. You know, people came and went and so on, but when we started collecting all the Titanic stuff, my son had set up his computer to where he could record at night while we were upstairs sleeping. And boy, did we were we in for a surprise, because as soon as I started collecting all the pictures and all the, you know, puzzles and the toys and everything, it got to the point for about a week that every single night you could hear this audibly without hearing the tape afterwards. People going up and down the stairs, opening and closing doors, they're talking, it sounds like there's a party going on. And one recording that Jamie had made literally had somebody tapping, it sounded like they were tapping their finger on the microphone on the computer, trying to figure out, like, what's that?
And
it was crazy.
What was your take on something like that?
Well, you know, if my son was Thomas Andrews, which was he was the architect of the ship, he also died with, you know, the rest of the people. He was given a choice to get on the lifeboats, and he wouldn't do it.
He stayed with the ship.
He did. And so I was getting used to this activity, but it was getting a little bit irritating because one night I'm upstairs reading, and I usually stay up late, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning.
And you're listening to Coast to Coast, right?
Exactly. And I heard this huge, like bang in the basement at 3 o'clock. Bang. And I thought, okay, check, you know, the recording at 3. 30 minutes later at 3:30, right on the dot, another bang. And so the next day we listened to the tape, and it did. It sounded like somebody had taken their fist and pounded it on the table or something.
In anger?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Kind of like maybe frustration, or it was so loud that I heard it audibly upstairs with my door closed. And the next day, you know, Jamie checked the tape, and sure enough, you know, there was a lot of activity. So a couple nights later, I was getting ready for bed, and this noise made me jump. And that's when I got angry, because I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be afraid in my own house. So I walked downstairs, I turned on all the lights, and I gave him a good talking to. I said, I understand that you probably are people from the Titanic, and I have much empathy for you. But you have to realize that my son, if you have a bone to pick with Thomas Andrews, he died with you. He left a wife and a daughter and went down with the ship. So if you're upset with him, take it somewhere else, because I'm done with this activity. I want you out of here, respectfully, but out of here. And it ended.
Hmm.
The last night.
It was an unbelievable sinking. I mean, a maiden voyage and everything else. Just
Oh my God, and so many things went wrong. You know, everything. They turned the, one of the ships turned their radios off so they didn't hear the distress calls. So many things went wrong.
Right. Now, Gettysburg out there in Pennsylvania, what was it like to be out there?
Oh, my God. I have always wanted to go to Gettysburg. Had a fascination with the Civil War. I believe that I probably lost a son in the Civil War is what I remembered back when we were studying it in middle school. I had nightmares about the Civil War. And so I've been fascinated with it. But when I went there, it was March of 2016, so it was a bit chilly but nice out. And we drove in, and as soon as you drive in, I went in from Maryland, so we drove south into Gettysburg, I believe. Not the greatest person with geography, but as soon as you drive down toward the city limits of Gettysburg, to me, since I'm an empath and I pick up other people's energy, it felt to me like you were going underwater. It was very heavy.
Thick.
Like just the air felt like it was, you know, it was, it's hard to describe because it's just so heavy, like a coat being thrown over your head.
Yeah.
And so that, the next day, we went out to the battlefield. My friend who'd been there, you know, 100 times, he's fascinated with the Civil War as well. We went out and we walked through the battlefield for about 2 hours. And it was overwhelming. I mean, when you, what really struck me more than anything is there was just nowhere for anyone to hide.
No, you know? It was wide open.
Yeah, I mean, for miles. I mean, you when you see what they were up against and, the, you know, coming hand-to-hand combat like that, and at what, 3 days, July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, they left over 50,000 bodies.
That's horrible.
And horrible. It's still there. I mean, you can, after 2 hours, I could taste blood in my mouth. It was awful.
Jeez. Let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Joe in the Bronx to get things started in New York. Hi, Joe.
Hi, George. Happy New Year.
You too, Joseph.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to ask Susan, have you done any investigation surrounding the Janis Joplin death in California? I did speak to somebody at the hotel where she passed away, I believe, of an overdose, and they still had that room where several people had stayed after that incident and written messages on the walls. Have you done anything at all about, you know, investigating her death?
No, I haven't investigated her, but I actually have a connection with her guitar player, Sam Andrews, who passed away a few years ago. And that doesn't really have anything to do with her death, but that, again, was another weird synchronicity of how I hooked up with him. But, you know, I can imagine if they have the hotel room in the same condition, kind of like when she was there and where she passed, I can imagine that there's still, you know, residual energy there from her.
Indeed, indeed. Now, did you ever come across any research on the Jim Morrison death?
I've read a lot about it, and there's, you know, it's very interesting because I think he pretty much died the way that they think that he did, but he might have been moved, which has caused a lot of controversy or, you know, theories.
I don't think he faked his death.
No, not at all. I don't believe that.
Fort Myers, Florida, Elaine's with us on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, George, and Happy New Year to you.
You too. Hope you have a great 19.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a great 19 with y'all.
Perfect.
I just have an interesting tidbit about the Twilight Zone, you know, that all most Coast to Coast listeners love to watch.
Yep.
And there is an episode called No Time Like the Past. And when I just watched it a few days ago, it just like brought it all home to me because it's so hard for us as humans to understand all this stuff about reincarnation. But when this man in this episode went back to the past, he could not stay there because he just could not, knowing the future, live there and stop interfering with stuff because he knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we can't live with extended past life memories through our whole life, or there's no way we can deal with it.
That's right. He wanted to go back and kill Hitler, I think, if I remember that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and he was in love with the school teacher, and it was going to burn down the school, and he couldn't let that happen. And
that's right.
He finally just realized that and that brings it home to where it just brought it home, like, ding, you know, it went on in my life. Okay, I see why we may have glimpses for some purpose, like our guest is speaking about, but we can't live like that our whole lives. Otherwise, we just can't do it because we want to keep changing everything, and that's not the purpose of us being here.
Is there a universal law there, Susan?
Oh, yeah, I believe that. She's right about that, because if we I don't know. I'm sure there is a law that pertains to that, but I think that, you know, I agree with what she's saying, is that we would never grow in this lifetime if we had all the knowledge from our last one or last few, or, you know, some people believe or remember way more than one lifetime. But it would interfere, you know, it does. It's amazing, though. It fascinates me.
Do you think it's ever possible to go back into time and alter events?
I think time travel is possible. I definitely do. I think that might have even happened or is happening because, you know, like Einstein believed that the past, present, and the future are existing all at once, which is very interesting because if we... and talking again about the creator or God, if we are but a thought of God, how can you separate a thought?
So true. So true. Next up, we've got Barry in Rock Hills, South Carolina. Hi, Bear.
Hello, George, old buddy, old pal, old friend of mine.
Hello, George, old buddy, old pal, old friend of mine.
I love it. Hey,
that wasn't me. They just replayed the tape of you.
Oh, I thought it was you.
No, that was you.
I want to hear it again after you get off the air. But anyway, for Susan, gosh knows, lady, I would love to have your job. You got the best job in the world.
Oh, thank you. It's been quite an adventure, I'll say that.
Oh, my gosh. Tell me about it. I was born right there in Savannah, Georgia, and not raised, but born there. Anyway, my second all-time favorite band, next to ZZ Top and AC/DC. Well, that's not both second.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Bad Company. Have you ever had a chance to interview Paul Rogers and that bunch? I got another question.
I have interviewed Bad Company when actually Paul Rogers was not with them, but Brian Howe was on vocals.
Right.
And I've interviewed Simon Kirk, the drummer, several times.
He's
and have met them several times.
He is great.
Oh, amazing. And Mick Ralphs, I mean, very nice. Great guys.
Yeah, well, being the backup part of the band, in every band, people don't notice the drummer like I do. I concentrate on listening to the drummer's beat and watching him and just listening to the rest of them. But anyway, Susan and George, thanks a lot for having me on. Have a great night.
Thanks, Barry. You take care of yourself. Nice listeners there. He was coming to one of our live stage shows, Susan, and he missed it in Nashville, North Carolina, because he fell cutting his grass and broke his shoulder. Really screwed it up. Yeah, but he's okay. Live shows are fun. I like them.
Yeah, Asheville was great, too. Next time you come around, I'm definitely coming up for that again.
Absolutely. We're going to be in Everett, Washington in March, and we're going to Seattle, Washington right now. Hi, Todd. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I have 3 points I would like to bring up.
Sure thing.
One was Mark Evans fired from the band, and what was Bon Scott really like that we don't know about? And with his death, there's some things, you know, there's still sealed documents, and it doesn't make sense that this shady heroin dealer would dump him in the car in the middle of the night, you know. And it's like Paul Chapman and Pete Way have both testified about this. So have you ever talked to the guys from UFO about his death?
Actually, I've never talked to them personally, but I know people that have interviewed them. And, oh, my God, Bon Scott was an incredible guy. I'm not totally convinced that heroin had anything to do with his death. He's a very heavy drinker. The decision that was made to leave him in the car overnight, again, a series of misadventures, if you will. And I don't believe that there's a big secrecy around how he died. He wasn't. I saw Bon over a three-year period before he passed, and there was no indication that he ever messed around with heroin. So I don't buy that conspiracy theory that he died that way.
Some of them are reckless, though, Susan, aren't they?
Well, definitely, and it's not like, you know, I'm not saying that he, you know, he absolutely didn't ingest any that night, but we don't know. And there's no indication that he was doing it before that. So I just think that people want more to the story than is what is really there.
Adrian's with us in Los Angeles. Hello, Adrian.
Hello, George and Susan. Thank you so much.
Sure thing.
Okay, I do have just a little bit of a story about synchronicity. I always get that word a little bit hard. I'm the only one in the world that doesn't have a cell phone. No cell phone. I don't want one. I don't need one. Okay. I just recently returned from Europe, and I was in Amsterdam visiting a friend and her family. And the night before I left from Amsterdam to go back to Los Angeles, I live in the San Fernando Valley. I was talking to her two sons. She has twin boys. And I was telling them that when I get to the airport in Los Angeles, I have to take a flyaway bus to get to the bus depot. And I needed to use somebody's cell phone who I would meet just to ask them, may I please use your cell phone to call my friend so he could pick me up from the bus station. LAX, you know, the airport in Los Angeles, I think is maybe the third largest in the United States. Anyway, thousands of people pass through LAX. And I was telling the boys the night before, I said, I don't know who is out there because I never push and force anything. I do believe life is planned. It's my belief. We can't push or force anything. Certainly we can make things happen. But so I said to them, I don't know who is out there, but I'm in Amsterdam. And I said, wherever in the world that this person is, I don't know where in the world they are, but I'm going to need to ask whoever it is to use their cell phone to call my friend tomorrow when I get to LAX. Fine, I'm in LAX now, and there's zillions of people going around, and I catch the LAX bus or the flyaway to the San Fernando Valley. Zillions of people could be on that bus from anywhere in the world. I'm sitting in the front seat next to a lady. We're just chit-chatting away, and this woman lives 3 minutes from where I live in the San Fernando Valley. 3 minutes. But you see, I wasn't like shock horror. Oh, my God, I can't believe you live 3 minutes. It was like, nope. This is where you were meant to be. This is where I was meant to be. We were meant to be together at that time, as I was telling the boys the night before, in Amsterdam. And this woman was in San Francisco visiting her sister.
See, that's synchronicity at its best. We're coming back with final questions and stories next. Welcome back. Our final segment with Susan Massino and your phone calls. Some incredible stories here, Susan. You could probably write another book from the callers.
Letters online too with their own stories, so this is very exciting.
Indeed it is. And when you updated this book, tell me about the updates.
Well, you know, I added in the numerology section, I added Malcolm Young's numbers since he passed away, but the whole last half of the book is very revised. There's lots more stories. I added the last chapter is different. It's about self-love. And I just felt like there's just more that I wanted to put out there that wasn't really said in the first edition.
Good for you. Did it take much time to do it?
It took me a few months, but it really was discipline to sit down and collect stories because I've got a million of them.
Now, you've had a scary encounter yourself, haven't you?
Well, you know.
What happened to you?
Yeah, when I went to Bobby Mackey's, I kind of got...
And explain Bobby Mackey's to people, Dodo, what that is.
Oh, yeah, okay. Bobby Mackey's is a nightclub in Wilder, Kentucky. It's right across the border. You can actually see Cincinnati from the parking lot. And they have a very haunted history. and they have ghost tours there all the time, and a lot of people have been, you know, grabbed and scratched and things like that because they provoke, and I don't care for that. I don't like to get involved in that, but when I went there, it was back in February of 2010, and I met up with, I went down with my friends Tamara Gleason and Donette Cook, Mystic Sisters from Osseo, Wisconsin. They brought me along, and I met Shannon and Jeff Sylvia, who was, they used to be on Ghost Hunters International, and they were hosting it, and Keith Age was there. I met him. And the night before, we went in and just went, you know, kind of a meet and greet, so I really didn't take it seriously of, like, protect yourself. And something, when we first got there, we walked out onto the dance floor, and the whole room spun for just a second.
What do you mean spun?
It felt like
you were going around and around and around?
Well, just one time. It was just like a...
Okay.
You know, it was all, there was four people, three, we were all walking
almost
in line.
Like a revolving dance floor.
yeah, exactly. It was, well, it was just, you know, the dance floor, and we had just stepped out onto it, and it felt like the room moved. It spun, and I stopped. We all stopped, and we all looked at each other, and as they looked at me, my girlfriend said to me, "Did you just feel that?" And as she said that to me, it sounded to me like she was speaking in slow motion, because whatever was there bounced off of them and went right through me.
Jeez. You felt it?
And it's so hard to describe, because it's kind of like a gust of, you know, wind, but it's not wind. It was just something could walk through me, and I could feel it, and I was horrified by it. I was like, oh, God, you know, but I didn't really take it seriously.
Did you feel cold?
Not really. It was really quick. It was, you know, it wasn't the usual cold spot kind of thing that you get. It was just this energy, whatever it was, it bounced off three people, and two of them are Reiki masters, so they knew how to protect themselves, and whatever it was went right through me. And I felt violated, really. I, you know, like slimed in the Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
It was kind of like a, ew, what was that?
Huh.
And I didn't think anything of it. And I had a good time that night, and we went back to the hotel, and the next night we came back, and they turned off all the power, the heat, because we were filming. So it was cold, and after 4 hours of, you know, going to different spots in the club and everything, and one guy in the basement got pinned up against the wall by something he couldn't see. Say they were provoking. And I, you know, didn't have a lot of activity, you know, that I saw. I was pretty much like, after a while, I'm like, I'm cold, and I want to go back to the hotel. And we were there till about 2 a.m. We went and got something to eat, went back to the hotel. And about 2 hours into my sleep, I sat straight up in bed, went right into the bathroom, and had profuse vomiting, which didn't stop for several days, actually.
Oh, God.
It was bad.
All right, back to the calls we go. Let's go to David, truck driving near Austin, Texas. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Georgia. I can't remember your guest name, but thanks for taking my call.
Susan.
Susan, I wanted to state this, all this reincarnation and the past lives, this is all biblically found in our Bibles. I sent you a book a couple months ago, George, that explains all that.
Yes.
But yeah, that's all. In Ecclesiastes 1, that's what God tells us, that no man will remember of things of the past, no man will remember of the things to come. Jesus says, through the regeneration of the Son of Man, and it's like I was telling your...
Screener.
I can't remember his name, but...
Tommy.
When I was telling him, I can't remember the exact chapter or the book it's in, but I know it's chapter 3. It talks about the regeneration. God washes away our sins through our regeneration. When he said, in the Old Testament, he said, the covenant's good for 1,000 generations. That means we're all here, our souls. Not our flesh, but our souls are here for 1,000 generations or 1,000 lives. We have to live 1,000 lives. The whole purpose of why we're here is to learn to love everybody equally in the same way the Father loves all of us equally, because he's had every right to completely destroy all of us from the beginning, because we all equally transgress the law. We break one law, we break them all. So that's the whole purpose of why we're here, is to learn how to love in the same way that the Father does. That's why with all these people that have the near-death experiences, they experience love wherever they go.
Mm-hmm.
That's because that's where we go. It's all about love. That's it. Doesn't matter of race, color, nationalism, size, or shape. It doesn't matter. Love your neighbor as you love yourself, as Jesus says in Matthew 7, verse 12. Do unto other men as you would have other men do unto you. This is the law and the prophets. That's the whole purpose of life. And we screw up in all of our lives when this 1,000 generations is expired. That's when the eighth day is here. That's when the big circumcision of everybody is going to happen. And it's going to be very painful. That's the circumcision of the heart, because many of our hearts are darkened because we think of ourselves before we think of anyone else.
Susan, what do you think of the God factor?
I think that he's correct. I love the whole thing. I mean, we are here to learn to love. It's so simple. And we most importantly have to learn how to love ourselves. And that's a hard thing. But once you get that and you understand that self-love is the beginning of loving everybody unconditionally, as he just stated, that's all there is. We're here for love.
That's true. Let's go to Jacqueline in Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Jacqueline. First-time caller.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Susan, you were talking with George earlier, and you had mentioned briefly something about your sister seeing the numbers 333. And I don't know if you explained what those numbers represented, but I also had been seeing those numbers for a short period of time. And unfortunately, prior to that, I had been seeing the numbers 911 for a longer period of time. I mean, obviously, we know what 911 represents. It's emergency. And after that period of time that I saw the numbers 911, that stopped, and that's when after I started seeing the numbers 333. And that also has stopped. But I'm just wondering, why would I be seeing those two series of numbers?
Well, I know the combination of 333 is a really good combination of numbers that tells you that you're, you know, on the right path. You are where you should be. Seeing 9/11, I think I noticed that a lot myself, and I think that is kind of part of the fabric of our consciousness now, because it changed so many things for our world, if you will. So it's just, especially when you see like 333 or anything that you see repeatedly, it shows you that you're noticing it, for one thing. And I like to remind people to, you know, kind of realize that you're okay right where you are. It shows that you're in the right place at the right time, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Joe in Long Island, New York's with us. Go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah, hi, Susan. If you look at Tony Bennett, he seems to have retained his voice. He's doing songs with Lady Gaga.
Oh, yeah, we just played one, Once Upon
a
Time.
Right, but it's not an anomaly. In other words, like, could Robert Plant do Robert Plant now from Led Zeppelin in the 70s? Do these people retain their voices generally, or do they fade on them due to loud noise or as they get older? Or could Robert Plant put out a YouTube video right now and look and sound like he did with Led Zeppelin?
Well, Joe, has my voice changed over the years?
Hi, George.
What do you think, Susan? It's a good question. Do their voices change?
I think they mature. I think Tony Bennett, you know, is still nailing it, but he's been doing it for a long time.
I mean, Tony Bennett's one of a kind. Pat Boone, who comes on our show regularly, he sounds the same. Billy Gibbons sounds the same.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think if they keep performing, you know, I mean, look at the Stones, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them do. Now, Tom tells me some bands get caught backtracking with, you know, former voices. You know, Kiss was one of them, he said, and stuff like that. But by and large, a lot of the artists, the McCartney sounds the same.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. But those are people that could sing in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
Kiss fans aren't going to like that.
I just hope mine stays the same.
I like your voice. I was going to say that your singing during your conference up in Asheville was a great surprise, and I thought it was very nice.
It was fun.
It was really fun.
Nobody ran out of the stage.
The audience.
Or the audience. They stayed. Let's go to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Frank, go for it.
Howdy, George. Susan, do you know anything about the late Graham Parsons, his death in Joshua Tree National Monument? He died of an overdose, and then he left in his will that his manager was supposed to burn the coffin. And he was a member of the Byrds and the Flying Burrito Brothers. And Chris, did you interview him or Chris Hillman, who took over the Flying Burrito Brothers after his death?
I don't know who took over for him. I can't remember the name, but I know that his body was stolen and taken out to the desert, and his wishes were granted.
And granted, though. Okay.
Yes.
Why would you steal a body?
Well, I'm sure
you're hiding something.
Certain ways that you could do that.
Joe in Monterey, California, go for it, Joseph.
Oh, okay. Great stories. I have a music synchronicity story, but I'll wait until after I ask.
If we have time, we're coming up to the top.
Yes, exactly. In your work, have you run into incarnated angels or ETs and things like that?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear you.
Have you come into any angels in your work, Susan?
Oh, yes. I've had definitely experiences with angels. The most prominent one, which I'll try to make quick, it's in my book. And one night I was in a car with my girlfriend, and I was driving too fast, and I missed...
Not good. Not good to do that.
Pardon?
Not good to go too fast.
Well, especially at 16 years old, I had just gotten my license.
Oh, geez.
And I forgot a 45-degree turn that I was supposed to make. And I was going too fast to do anything about it, and I specifically remember looking over at my girlfriend, and in my head I apologized to her because I thought, you know... this is going to be a fatal thing. We went airborne after we made it over this hill that I should have taken a 45-degree turn. We went up into the air, and I grabbed my steering wheel. I closed my eyes, and I waited for the impact. And I didn't see any. What I saw in my head was a flash of white light, but that I thought because I was closing my eyes so tight. And before I knew it, we were on the road, in the right lane, going 55 miles an hour like nothing happened, and the corner was behind us.
Jeez.
And there's no other explanation except that somebody took that car and put it back on the road for me.
Unbelievable. Susan, the clock has gotten us. Thank you for your work and your dedication, and keep in touch with us. And, you know, now that our Gary Patterson is gone, we'd love to use you on some musical interviews and things like that as well, okay?
Oh, that would be an honor, George. Thank you so much. I love your show, and I'm always listening.
You stay in touch with Tom, and, you know, we will see what the future holds for everybody. Susan Messino, and, of course, she's on our Beyond Belief show at beyondbelief.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then... be safe, everyone.